Welcome to Face to Face. Face to Face is an in-depth look at the life and career of a popular sports figure from a Christian perspective. Now, here's your host of Face to Face, Tom Rust.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome to Face to Face. We're glad to have you, and hope you enjoy our podcast. We have an interview that we're bringing to you today, and it's with a guy that just is a tremendous guy. You know, he's a baseball player. He's a Major League Baseball player. He's the catcher for the Arizona Diamondbacks, and when we did this interview a couple of years ago, he was the catcher for the San Francisco Giants, but Stephen Vogt is a guy who just epitomizes leadership and epitomizes what the Christian faith is all about. And he also epitomizes what it is to be a perseverer, to stay with things. And he has seen some lows, and he has seen some highs. He was drafted by the Tampa Bay Rays, and when he finally got to the majors in I think it was 2012, 2013. He went 0 for 32, did not get a hit. But 2 years later and 3 years later also, in 2015 and 2016, he was an all-star. And he was in the all-star game in Cincinnati in 2015, and then when they played in San Diego, he was an all-star. He played for Tampa Bay, played for Oakland, had some really good years in Oakland. And then in 2017, he was sent to Milwaukee, and in Milwaukee, he did pretty well, but he had an injury, and in 2018, he did not play. And then in 2019, with the San Francisco Giants, that's the chance where we had to see him, and now in the last couple of years, he's been playing for the Arizona Diamondbacks. And the Diamondbacks have had a brutal season here in 2021. It has been really tough. They are, as we mentioned this, they are in last place, far behind them, 25 to 30 games out. But it's guys like Stephen Vogt who have been to the top, who have been leaders in their clubhouse, who are one of the guys that God has placed in a great position to kind of take this team through these tough times. And when you have that sort of a record that they have, there are very tough times. Probably guys worried about their future, whether it be players or coaches. And Stephen himself may be in prayer every night. But as we will share with you during this podcast, you will see what kind of leadership that he has provided to teams and players over the last few years. And he is one of God's chosen people in Major League Baseball. Let's take a break. And when we come back, you'll hear the podcast with Stephen Vogt. So you're listening to Face to Face, and enjoy our podcast. Okay, welcome back to Face to Face. We're glad to have you with us, and our guest today is Stephen Vogt, catcher for the San Francisco Giants. I think he also can play some other positions like outfield, first base, whatever. Stephen, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm really excited to sit down with you for a while.
Welcome to Face to Face, and I know that you're from Visalia, California. You've played for a number of teams, played for the San Francisco Giants now, and I know that, or at least read somewhere, that was one of your favorite teams growing up. This has got to be kind of a dream for you.
Yeah, it's been really fun. I've been fortunate to play the game for a while now, and like you said, a bunch of different places, but this has felt pretty special. The inner little kid in me, you know, from the time I was 3 years old, pretending to be a Giant, and now getting to look in the mirror and see the Giants uniform has been pretty special.
When you were growing up, did you get to Candlestick and have a chance to see the Giants play?
Yeah, we went to Candlestick probably a few games a year. I can't remember off the top of my head, but then the last season at Candlestick, my dad and mom got season tickets, and so we could see the last few games and then have season tickets the first few games at AT&T, so we get to go to a lot of Giants games from about 98, 99 through 2003 when I graduated high school.
Did you have any favorite players growing up?
I did. I was a big fan of Will Clark. He was kind of my favorite. My brother and I had the dynamic duo poster with he and Kevin Mitchell in our room, and just always wanted to hit like him. And then Barry Bonds was also one of my favorite players. He was just so exciting to watch every single time he came to the plate.
You were drafted in the 12th round by Tampa Bay 2007, but I'll tell you what, getting to the into the majors wasn't easy for you. I know that you had a couple of times where you thought you were going to get calls, and the calls did not come through. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I was a senior sign, so I was kind of a higher or lower round draft pick, but not a big signing bonus. And when you're one of those guys, you can't really afford to make any mistakes on your way up. And I had some good years, but kind of was a late developer. I didn't really come into my own until I was 26, 27 years old, and that's when I made my debut, is when I was 27, and just kind of through injuries and just different other things kind of slowed my path down, and I had to outplay a lot of guys to get there, so it was a long road.
As I read about you and did a little homework on you, I really saw that you're really an overcomer, and you went to kind of a small college in Azusa Pacific. Tell me a little bit, Division II school, tell me a little bit about Azusa Pacific.
Yeah, it was a great school. You know, at the time I was there, it was an NAIA school, so it was a little smaller than the D2 they are now, but my brother Danny went to Westmont College in Santa Barbara, and so I knew the conference pretty well. And head coach Paul Svagdis at Azusa Pacific, a great Christian man, came to my house and offered me a partial scholarship, and I took it and went there and played there 4 years. And that was kind of, I was in his first recruiting class, so we kind of developed a program with my class and him, and just a great place to go to school. I met my wife Alyssa there, and I love it.
It's a Christian school too, and I know that probably your faith was enhanced a little bit as you went there.
Absolutely. It was that was number one thing for me. I wanted to play baseball at a Christian college. That was kind of my goal. And I was so blessed just to be in that community, and to have a coach, like I mentioned earlier, Coach Svagdis. His number one thing was, I'm going to teach you guys how to be men of God, better husbands, better fathers, and then we're going to win some baseball games. And he taught us through the game of baseball how to be men of God.
It's great when you're a man of God. It's great because you have to go through some things. And as I said, you're an overcomer. 2009, playing in the minors, you had a torn labrum, and it's kind of tough for a catcher. How'd you fight through that?
Honestly, it was one of those things where I made up my mind that if I'm never going to get to play again, I'm going to enjoy every day. And so I rehabbed hard, and I didn't want to be just another statistic of a guy who hurt his shoulder and never came back from it. And my wife, Alyssa, kept pushing me every day to be my best and to be my best that I could be that day. And I stayed around the team that year in 2009 in Port Charlotte, Florida, and helped me really love the game more and learn the game from watching. And it really helped me become a better player after that. But it was definitely grueling every day and testing of my faith and of me.
I know also it's great when you've got Christian brothers, particularly on a team. A guy that's been on face-to-face years ago is Ben Zobrist. He probably was around Tampa Bay at that time. Was he an encouragement to you?
Absolutely. Ben was great to me when I was a young player, and he was always encouraging to us with our faith, and very just he would challenge us too. And I think that was my favorite part about Ben, is he wasn't just always encouraging, he was challenging as well. And I think you need to have a good mix of that with your Christian brothers and sisters. Is, you know, we need to love, but we also need to, you know, push and encourage.
Tell you when you're doing wrong, and kind of not be afraid to get in your face once in a while, right?
Absolutely. Or, you know, just challenge each other. Hey, have you been reading? Have you been spending time in prayer? Have you been spending alone time and quiet time with God and listening? I think that's a big one too, is encouraging each other to listen.
Now, another challenge that you had was when you got to the majors in 2013, playing with Tampa Bay, you got off to kind of a slow start, and that can be, I know that can be discouraging. You're up here and you just had a rough go at the beginning. How did you get through that?
Well, a big thing for me was just believing in myself. You know, I went 0-for-32 before I got my first hit over the course of a year and a half. And, you know, it feels like a big weight on your shoulders. And, you know, I kept on saying, man, I failed. And, you know, I think through just prayer and talking to Alyssa and just pray, you know, my faith, I changed my verbiage from I've failed to I haven't succeeded yet. And I think keeping that positive mindset is the most important thing.
You kind of broke out, though. You remember your first major league hit?
Oh, yeah. Home run off Joe Kelly. It was just a sheer just joy and elation and just kind of everything in my baseball career that I'd worked towards kind of came to fruition in one swing.
St. Louis?
It was in Oakland against St. Louis in 2013,
yeah. Your big breakthrough came that year in Oakland in 2013. What was it like? As we record this, this is a trade deadline day, and there's a lot of movement around. Tell me a little bit about when you went to Oakland. What's it like playing for a team, coming up with a team like in Tampa Bay, and then ending up on another team where you got a whole new teammates and a whole new system?
It was different. I kind of looked at it as a fresh start. You know, a lot of times, no matter what you do for a living, no matter what you do through life, you start to get pigeonholed, or you start to have people think certain things of you. And when you go to a new employer or a new place, you get to it's a fresh start, and you get to make new first impressions, and you get to show people what your abilities are without them having any preconceived notions. And so for me, walking in the clubhouse in Oakland and saying, wow, none of these guys really know me at all. None of them were thinking about the fact that I was 0 for 25 the year before. None of them were thinking about, oh, he can't do this, this, or that. It was, I can impress. And that's just what I did. I went out there and relaxed and played well.
Yeah, you did really well. You made the All-Star team, yeah. 215, 216. I'm not sure. Maybe there were people that didn't believe in you back when you were in Tampa Bay, but you believed in yourself. Tell me about the All-Star experiences. I don't recall where 15 and 16, where it was. Tell me your experiences in the All-Star game.
It was just incredible. 15 was in Cincinnati and 16 was in San Diego. And I specifically remember the Cincinnati one, sitting there and kind of when your name gets called as an All-Star for the first time, you know, I'm not a superstar by any means or a guy that was a can't-miss prospect. And I had to work really hard to get there and overcome some stuff. And so I was sitting there and kind of thinking to myself, man, I'm on the All-Star team. This is really weird. I don't belong here. But then you start looking around the room at some of the other people in there, and then you have a realization of, oh yeah, I do belong here. And it gives you just this sense of such achievement. Being an All-Star is the highest individual honor you can get as an active player. And to be able to do that twice is quite a humbling experience.
Our guest is Stephen Vogt. He's the catcher for the San Francisco Giants. And we're here at Citizens Bank Park in Philadelphia. First time I've been here. This is a really nice park.
It's beautiful.
There's a lot of beautiful parks in the majors. And I'll tell you what, Oakland, maybe not one of the most beautiful parks in the majors, but they loved you in Oakland. You had guys chanting your name. You had a banner. You even had a T-shirt. Tell me a little bit about all that experience.
Yeah, it was pretty neat. You know, Oakland, the ballpark's old. It's run down. It's not a nice ballpark compared to some of the newer ones, but you know what it is? It's Oakland's ballpark. And we kind of take pride in that as an A, you know, and even still, you know, when people start to bash the Coliseum, I kind of defend it. I feel like it's something I need to defend, but it's a great place with great fans. And in 2014, they started the "I Believe in Stephen Vogt" chant. And
something to do with the World Cup.
Yeah, it was during the World Cup. I was playing right field, and you know, it sounds like the "I believe that we will win." They just changed it to "I believe in Stephen Vogt," and it stuck. And pretty much every at bat from May of 2014 through the time I left in 2017, they chanted "I believe in Stephen Vogt" every at bat that I came up. And they made T-shirts. They had a bobblehead day with. I mean, it became kind of a little following. It was pretty fun.
You come from a strong Christian family. Tell me about your family.
My dad Randy, my mom Tony. They grew up in the church. My great grandfather was a pastor. My grandfather was a pastor. So I come from a long line of faith and God fearing people. And you know, the biggest thing that my dad and mom really instilled in my brother and I was to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and treat your neighbor as yourself. And you know, my dad was so big on the second one, and same with my mom, was just treating your neighbor as yourself and teaching us to just love other people and to have a servant's heart and to be giving, to tithe, you name it. It was they raised my brother and I to follow Christ and to lead by example, and that's what we try to do, both of us.
Was there a time when Christ became very personal, very real to you?
Yeah, I was 13 years old, and it actually happened for me. I went to a Christian school kind of growing up, and My sixth grade year was very important to me, and I was going into seventh grade, and right around my 13th birthday in seventh grade, we went away to a camp, outdoor education kind of thing up at Hume Lake Christian Camp in California, one of my favorite places on earth. And if you haven't been there, you gotta try and check it out. They have some unbelievable summer camps up there. But really, you just went up there and got away for a week. And in that week, Jesus really just revealed himself to me. And it became very real. It stopped becoming my parents' rules and faith and became my own. And then I was baptized later that year in the Holiday Inn pool in Visalia, California. So that was it.
Great moments. Now, in 2017, you were claimed off waivers by the Milwaukee Brewers. And, of course, that's a whole different situation. That's getting from the American League into the National League. But there's a guy that I know on the Milwaukee Brewers, a bullpen catcher by the name of Marcus Hanel. I think I got the right name. Mm-hmm. I have ran into guys throughout my years that say that's a guy that really had an impact on my life. I assume you knew him. Did he have an impact on your life?
Tremendous impact. Marcus Hanel is one of the best people you'll ever meet, in not only in baseball but in life. Just, you want to talk about a servant's attitude and a servant's heart. He goes out of his way to make sure that every one of us is loved, every one of us is taken care of. He'll give you the shirt off his back, if not more than that. And he challenges us. You know, he challenges all. As soon as he finds out you're a believer, it's on, and he's going to be all over you, and he's going to challenge you and make sure that you're doing the right things. And then he's very encouraging to guys that are maybe questioning their faith. So he's a tremendous leader, a tremendous man, and I'm very proud to know that I have a relationship with him.
One of the men, Steve Sonderman, I believe he's a Brewers chaplain. I read a quote where he said, "You are a leader of leaders." That's got to be very inspirational and very complimentary. What does it mean?
I mean, obviously, coming from Steve, he was a great leader for us. He was our chapel leader in Milwaukee. He still is there, and got to see him a few weeks ago when we visited the Brewers. But to have a quote like that, you know, I've always kind of been the leader type, and I think that's something that God's given me the ability to do, is to lead men and women, and mostly, you know, men in baseball. But I challenge people. I want people to be great, and I want people to understand that they're, no matter what they're struggling with, no matter what they're thinking, no matter how low on themselves they are, guess what? We've all been there.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how low you think you are or how sad you are or upset. Somebody's been there, and it's probably me. It's probably one of us.
Now, this is a day in which there's going to be new guys walking into your clubhouse. There's going to be other guys that are teammates of yours that are going to walk away. As a leader of this team, what do you say to the guys that are walking away if you knew them, and what do you say to the new guys coming in to make them a part of this team?
I mean, I think as a leader and as a just a good teammate, you go give them a hug and you wish them well, the guys that are leaving. You say, hey, man, we're really going to miss you, but we'll be rooting for you, you know, from afar. And then the new guys, you just want to make them feel as welcome as possible as soon as possible, because we all perform better when we feel like we're welcome and we're a part of the group. And that's the biggest thing, is from the second they walk in, you embrace them with loving arms and you just tell them, hey, welcome to the family. Let's get started. We're excited to have you.
I know one thing, too, that I've seen in baseball. You have a lot of guys that came up in single-parent homes, don't have a lot of fathers, and you're a tremendous father figure, and you had a tremendous father. Can you be like a father figure to some of these younger players?
Absolutely. You know, I think especially now that I'm getting a little older, I see that with the younger players is, you know, a lot of guys, this is their first time being away from, if you know, like you said, if they don't have a father in their life, or if they're away from home for the first time. You know, we got some 23, 24-year-olds now that maybe haven't been away from home too long. So for me, it's just loving on them and being there and just kind of being a sounding board. And I can definitely see some aspects of a father-like relationship with some of these guys. And that's obviously a high compliment if you're getting that from someone.
And that's what you need. And your father, you've talked about the fact, What are some aspects that your father passed on to you that you pass on? What makes your father a great father?
My father was just a giving, selfless person. He worked so hard for our family to be able to do the things that we did. He coached my brother and I through Little League, through high school, and he did that by going into work at 3 a.m., you know, coming home, you know, fortunately he had a job where he could be flexible with that, and he'd get in at 3 and he'd get all his work done so that he could be home in time for when we got done with school and he could coach us. And
that's tremendous.
And I think my brother and I both talk about that, about how Dad was able to make, I'm sure he was tired. There were so many nights where I'm sure he was running on 3-4 hours of sleep, but it was important to him for us to see him and have him be home. And he was, you know, my dad was around and he was home and while he was working, and it was a special, special thing for us.
Now, when you were in Oakland, you won an award called the Dave Stewart and Catfish Hunter Award. Tell me about that.
So the Dave Stewart Award was really important to my wife and I because it's for community service. And for us, we want to give back. For some reason, when you play baseball for a living, people listen to you when you talk. And so if you can use that for the better of a group of people and give back. We were fortunate to be involved with a place called the School of Imagination in Dublin, California, and it's a school for kids with special needs, ranging from anywhere from just kind of social disorders up to severely autistic and nonverbal. And we were able to volunteer our time there and do some good fundraisers with them to raise awareness, and the school has just grown tremendously from it. And a gentleman named Chad Pinder, now with the Oakland A's, kind of took over for us when we left, and he's done a great job with the school, kind of keeping the awareness going. So that one was great, but the Catfish Hunter Award to me is probably the greatest award I've ever won in my life, and that's the one that's voted on by your teammates. And basically we vote for the player who best exudes the characteristics of Catfish Hunter, which are leadership, playing the game the right way, treating your teammates the right way, and kind of just being a good human, good teammate. And so being voted 3 years in a row with Oakland for that award was probably one of the most special things that I could have ever dreamed of.
Stephen Vogt, it's been great talking to you, and I certainly appreciate your faith. I know Colossians 3:23 is your favorite verse. Tell me about that.
Just every time I take the field, every time I parent, every time I go home, I want that verse just ringing through my head. And, you know, whatever you do, do it wholeheartedly as to the Lord and not to men. And I think so much of what we do can get glorified to man, but I just want to understand that my heart is in the right place and my heart is what's taking me, and I'm doing this for God's glory and no one else's.
Thank you again, Stephen Vogt, the catcher for the San Francisco Giants. You had a home run last night.
I did, yeah.
And congratulations on that. I know there's a number of them out there, but I know it always feels good every time you do it.
Every time. It's a great feeling.
Welcome back from our podcast. I hope you enjoyed our time with Stephen Vogt. And with the latest protocols that baseball has had, I've not had a chance to really talk to him. I got close to him earlier in the season when the Arizona Diamondbacks came to Cincinnati, but didn't have a chance to talk to him. I could not get on the field, and had a chance to talk to his friend, my friend, Matt Hergis, who is the pitching coach for the Diamondbacks, and didn't even get a chance to be on the field with him, but just had a chance to kind of lean over the rail in Cincinnati while Matt walked by, and we had a good conversation just for a couple of minutes. But Stephen Vogt, great guy, and we hope that he has continued success with Arizona and whatever he gets to do. I mean, he may have a future that goes for a few more years in baseball, or he may be doing something else. But whatever he does, we know that he is going to be successful, and particularly as he continues to hang on to that Colossians 3:23 verse. Well, we want to share a verse with you to close out our podcast. And the verse that we want to share with you comes from Psalm 100, verse 4. And it talks about worship, and it talks about what it means to be in communication with God. And here's what it says. Enter his gates with thanksgiving and into his courts with praise. Give thanks to him and praise his name. I think about that every time I walk into a stadium. Enter the stadium with thanksgiving and into his courts with praise. Whenever I go into a locker room and have the chance to talk to players, I always want to share with them the gospel, and always want to let them know how much, despite what their batting average is or despite what the record of their team is, always want to let them know that God loves them and we love them. And it's always great to have Christian athletes come on and share with us on Face to Face. Hope you've enjoyed our podcast. Check us out, with the other podcasts that we have here at Face to Face. And before long, we will have another new one for you, and hope that you'll check that out. And remember, as we always say, as we have said for the 30 years that we have done Face to Face, no matter where you go, no matter what you do, be a good sport. Goodbye, everyone.